create material for yourself? Do you sit down and write every day, or do you just do what?
I wish I did. I wish I sit down and write every day, but I don't. I don't think I've picked up a pen and written down material for the last 7 years. Everything which I do is kind of stored up here, which is a mistake, because it means that you forget things, you forget the way that things go, you forget the narrative of routines and stuff. And when you're coming down to do things like a cruise ship, in which you have to go on and do three completely different half hours, you know what I mean? So you can't even repeat a single joke, you know, and that's where you have to really dig deep. You're so used to, it's like somebody so used to running 100 or 200 meters, suddenly he's got to run, you know, 5,000 meters. Then it's kind of, you can run the distance, but the rhythm of it and, you know, where you're going to be placed in that race is going to be completely, you know,
throw you,
yeah.
You're match
ready. Exactly, yeah. Unless you're match fit, you can't, you know, do it. And so, therefore, doing these cruises, and I have to sit down and write a set list. You know what I mean? Of all the material which, you know, I think, and then put it into different 30-minute sets. Okay, set A, I'll talk about places I've been. Set B, I'll talk about growing up and kids. And set C, I'll talk about relationships and all that kind of stuff. And that's the way I have it. And so the various material which I've written over the years, I kind of put into those different categories. And it would be a lot easier if I had on my laptop, on my PC at home, you know, written word for word, the routines, you know. I remember when I was growing up, that I have my parents, blah 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 blah, and then this happened and that happened, whatever, and a little pish at the end. But I don't have that written down anyway. It's all because I think if I write anything, I got a superstition. If I write something down, it then becomes not real. You know what I mean? And I like to have that. I want the audience to believe I'm saying this for the first time. And if I write it down somewhere, it becomes too scripted and everything, as opposed to still a little bit. There's still going to be.
There's glow to
it's got,
it.
Yeah, yeah. There's still going to be movement.
There's something in the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I have to be like.
So you don't do it word for word.
Yeah.
Because the other thing I was going to say is, how do you. Because you're travelling abroad a lot at the moment.
Yeah.
You have been for a while.
Yeah.
Because you're doing like the Middle East, you're doing the Middle East, China,
I've done Australia, I've done Japan,
South Africa,
I've all over.
Does that change, or do you change that? Do you do a lot of research to make sure that's going to work? I mean, for instance, I did the gig in Atlanta, Georgia, which was very bizarre for many reasons. One of the things I didn't realise is that you cannot say anything derogatory about your family. You cannot there. They would. And the gig went incredibly well until I touched on my South African background, and then suddenly it was like,
okay.
Tumbleweed, you know, really, really bad. And I didn't know that. And now I would sort of think, you know, about asking the locals ahead of time, but even then sometimes they can misinform
because
they're not aware.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that process?
When I land in a particular another country, first thing I'll do is I'll be slightly more aware than I am normally about, you know, things which are happening around me. I'll watch TV for a little while and see what they get in that particular country, what programs they get and whatever. Then I'll ask various things. I'll say, do you get this? Do you see that? You know, things like, and they're like major, you know, like mainly US programs, like, because they probably export to all over the world. You know what I mean? So I'll talk about that sort of thing. And then just things as they occur to me. Because that's all right anyway. Things occur to me, and you know, I'll try and find a way in my head, a way of conveying to the audience. And the majority of times that I actually, in inverted commas, write things now, is whilst I'm on stage. You know, something happened earlier and I'll talk about it and hopefully be able to hit a funny at that, you know, whilst I'm there. And if I do it again one night, then the following night it'll probably be edited a little bit and, you know, tightened up, and then hopefully by the third time I do it, it will be, you know, ready to stay. So it's like, and things kind of help. Like, I went to South Africa in Durban, and they have a thing called what are called car guards, which are black guys, which you turn up at a car park, or you park your car in the street, and for some reason, you know, guys feel obligated to walk up to these guys wearing these sort of like orange fluorescent vest tops and give them some money, so that they can, in inverted commas, look after their car. Although you paid to park there originally, anyway, if you had a paid car, but there's still these black guys which you go and tip to make sure that your car's okay. Which is strange to me, but you know, I suppose they're thinking if they come back, their car might get scratched or tire let down or something.
Or just not be there.
and loads of guys do this. And so I'd walk on stage, and it's just, you know, a well-known thing.
Part of the scene.
Part of the scene. Right? It's something that just like over here, we tip, you know, in a restaurant or a hairdresser or a taxi driver. There they give money to these car guys. So I walked on stage in South Africa and said, good evening, my name is Junior Simpson. And what half of you are thinking, you know, didn't we not leave him outside guarding the cars? You know what I mean? So, things like that are routines and material you can do specifically for that area,
environment.
But I couldn't, there's no point doing it over here.
It wouldn't make any sense.
It wouldn't make any sense at all. So,
and how do you deal with that research in somewhere like China where the language isn't there? You can't really watch it in years, again,
it's just things that you just notice yourself. You know what I mean? There's no point sort of like, for me, there's no point saying, well, you know, what happened in the local news thingy? All 6 months ago, there was a terrible uprising, whatever. Now, if I don't know about it anyway, and no one's mentioned in conversation, as far as I'm concerned, there's no real point talking about it, because it might not be that well known, or it might not really, be that relevant to that crowd.
You were also saying earlier that you don't feel able to do stuff that is actually not true.
So, if it's completely made up and whatever, I can't sell it.
In an emotional sense, yeah. You haven't got a cousin called Vagina or whatever. You have in your sense.
Although she does get lots of dates. I talk about having 16 nieces and nephews. That is true. I talk about having about to become a father on stage at the moment, and that is true. I talk about being in a mixed relationship, and that's true. I talk about my family. Everything I say about my family is based off it. There has to be some. It's got to be based on. There's got to be some truth. I've got to be able to trace it back to a real event that happened before I can talk about something. And even when I'm talking about things like, I do a routine about religion, which is, I don't do that often, but every now and again, I'll do a thing about religion, and I'm trying to explain to audiences that I'm not peeing on anyone's faith or anything, but we've got to remember there's over 1,500 different faiths on this planet. Not everybody's going to be 100% correct. And at the end of the day, religion, you know, faith is something else, but religion is someone's opinion, you know. And as my father used to say, opinions are like belly buttons. We all have one, but they don't hold much water. And so I talk about that, and because that came about because of about two or three years ago, there was a woman in Nigeria who was going to be stoned to death because she was caught.
She
committed adultery, and they were going to stone her to death. And it was all because of the religious thing. And it kind of goes back to the story in the Bible of this woman who is going to be, you know, found in adultery. Yet they're going to stone her. Yet that she was having an affair with, the guy she was, you know, she was caught in the act of adultery. Yet the guy that was there as well. I'm sorry, but you can't be caught in adultery on your own. You know what I mean? If that was the case, I'm cheating every night. But it, you know what I mean? But you know, the guy gets, you know, there's nothing much about the guy, but she's kind of, you know, she's going to be stoned to death. And the same thing with this woman in Nigeria. And that writing, you know, reading that story led me to kind of say about, well, religion is you know, faith is one thing, but religion, the whole sort of like the rules and regulations, is ridiculous. And I say that religion, you know, there's always seems to be this thing where if you're religious and you abstain from sex, then that makes you, oh my God, you're incredible, which is rubbish, because sexual thoughts, sexual desires is a part of being a human being. And then I go on to say that, you know, I'm sure, you know, Gandhi must have masturbated from time to time. You know what I mean? If you spend all day fighting the British on an empty stomach, you need to do something to relax at night time, right? Mother Teresa, right? I'm sure that buzzing sound around her wasn't always the flies, right? 2 Duracell batches and 7 inches of plastic, right? I'm sure Martin Luther King did not preach about every dream he had. I would love to have been in church that morning. I had a dream. I approached by a beautiful woman wearing a thong bikini and high-heeled boots. There was another woman wearing a basket, stiletto heels. I saw black men and white women and white men and black women, some bound, some free. And they all joined hands and sang the old Negro spiritual song, "Feel My Ass, Feel My Ass." Wank me off tightly, but feel my ass.
Have you done any gigs in Atlanta, Georgia?
No, I've never done.
Trying that material. That'd be brilliant. Have you done gigs in the States?
I've not done the States. I've done Canada. I've done gigs in Canada. I've got a good friend of mine, Russell Peters, out there, and a few years ago he hooked me up with some shows in and around Toronto and stuff, which I enjoy doing, but I've never actually performed in America itself as yet. I'd love to, but I'd need to go with a calling card. I'd need to go having done something, or you know, and being in Love Actually for 15.8 seconds isn't really enough of a calling card to get me on the Conan O'Brien show, you know what I mean? So I need.
Are you doing quite a lot of acting?
Not as much.
Trying to build it up.
Not really. I whenever I do a TV show, I've done 3 films to date. And if I do, I was in Holby City, and I've done a few other bits and pieces. But every time I do that, in my mind, I'm only working to try and build up my live audience. I'm kind of hoping that a few people might see me in this and see me in that. And I thought, oh, that's a guy from Max and Paddy. We'll he's playing down our local, you know, pub. We'll go and have a look at him and all that stuff. But I don't see myself at this point like giving up stand up to become a full time actor. You know what I mean?
It's the live audience that you're
still. It's a live audience, yeah. And also the fact that I'm not under the, you know, there's not a director or an editor that can, you know, put their own stamp on what I'm saying, you know, their own slant on it. When you're in front of an audience, you say it, they hear it, and they either love it or they don't. And so, yeah, I like that aspect. I like the aspect of here, now, and now, you know what I mean?
And where do you see yourself in about 5 years' time?
5 years' time, it would be nice to for my profile to be a bit more, a bit larger, a bit, you know, a bit higher than it is at the moment. It'd be nice to, you know, broken places like America, to be known, you know, and the only way to really do that is through television or through film. And so, you know, I still like to see myself in 5 years' time, maybe not schlepping up and down the country as much as I do, doing the smaller gigs, but maybe my own shows, you know, theatres.
I was going to say, why aren't you doing your own one-man show yet?
Because I don't
many
really...
lesser comics are.
I know, well, but that's all well and good, and I wish them well, and they do a great thing. But for me, unless I'm 100% sure I can sell a ticket, then I don't want to take the risk. I don't want to be on my own driving up the motorway, driving to Burnley, or driving to probably the wrong choice place to go, or Pocklington Art Centre, and 20 people be in the audience. You know what I mean? I'd rather continue learn my craft on program in gigs like the Comedy Store and Jonglers, doing my 20, 30 minutes and whatever, getting paid and heading home, and and then doing, you know, things like Buzzcocks and doing things like They Think It's All Over, what other TV shows, panel games going on, building up a profile. When I get to a point that every single circuit gig I do, I turn up and people are selling out, and the majority of them are there specifically to see me, then I think to myself, it might be time to kind of go on the road. But I don't think the name Junior Simpson is there yet. And just because I put my name on a poster and a list of tour dates, which happened to be Jesters, The Glee, and you know the Comedy Cafe, that doesn't really count as a tour. That just, you know, that's just gigs in your diary. Until I get to the point where people are going out, leaving home, paying money specifically to see me at places like the Comedy Store, Jonglers, The Glee, and whatever, the Rawhide up in Liverpool, and a vast majority of it, about 40-50%, then I'll still play the circuit.
So I emceed the King's Head a while back, and you were supposed to be headlining, and you pulled out, and I actually asked the audience whether they were expecting you, because I had to apologise for you not being there. And about 90% of the audience were there for you.
Okay. Geez.
But that again is okay. It was very. They were slightly let down, but they were. It was very interesting to see that one, there was that amount of black people in the King's Head, uh-huh. and two, that on a general vote, that's how many people had come to see you.
Okay.
So certainly within London, I think there is the audience there. But whether that would
I get wherever I go around the country. Invariably, at least five times during the day, if I'm out and about, then people will know who I am, or they'll know that I'm on TV, they'll know that I'm comic.
That you're Lenny Henry, just a little bit shorter.
You look so big on the television, and you sound grummy. But it's, so I do get recognised.
So when you were saying, this is a sort of last question, we'll wind it up, but the last thing I was wanting to ask you, said about learning your craft, what areas do you feel you still would like to get more development or learn more about?
I sit down and I listen to people, my influences, the people I like to listen to and watch, range from international stars, and superstars of comedy, like Eddie Murphy's Delirious, Chris Rock's Born for Pain, Richard Pryor live in concert here and now, live at Sunset Strip, and the ability that they have of taking a routine, a subject, and making it a classic, you know what I mean? Something that people will then, Chris Rock, we did the whole thing, Blacks and Niggers.
Yeah. I really like black people. God, I hate niggers.
Yeah, exactly. That is a brilliant.
Goes down in history.
It does go down in history. Virtually everything that Richard Pryor did is in history. The Cookout by Eddie Murphy, again, a classic routine. And even things like Woody Allen's sort of like the Moose routine. You know what I mean? Things like that, which, I don't think, I've got one or two routines which I'm really, really proud of and I'm really, really happy with, and they are, for me, pitch perfect. But other things I think is kind of just silly. And when I get to the point where I can go on and I can talk about ordering a glass of water in a pub and talk about it for 5 minutes and make it sound hilarious, then I'm at a point where I think that, I'm ready to kind of take on bigger and better things. But at the moment, when I'm doing the store, what I'm doing, I'm lazy as well. I need to kind of, things.
It's not what you're accused of normally. You're a real workhorse on the comedy circuit.
I work a lot, and I enjoy it though. You know what I mean? It doesn't feel to me work. I got accused of either being a workhorse, but then again, it doesn't feel to me too as work, because I'm doing a job I enjoy, I love. And then I get accused of, when I go away to places like Hong Kong, Taiwan, Bangkok, Dubai, Australia, Canada, I think, you must be so lucky travelling around cruise ships and all that kind of thing. It's lovely. But it's not, because to me, I'm doing the same job at a different location, slightly different venue, but a different location, but the same job essentially. But I want to be able to continue entertaining. No one's going to change their voting habits from this, by listening to me. No one's going to suddenly, you know, phone their parents and say that they love them because they heard this content or whatever. But if I can contribute in some small way to people having a nice night out, then that's not too bad a job to do.
It's not too shabby, not as too your shabby. Father would say.
Yeah, my dad would say, not too shabby at all.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Sabrina.